शर्म बदतमीज़ छी छी।
I'm Sangeeta Pillai and this is the Masala Podcast, where we talk about all those things that we're not supposed to talk about as South Asian women. Sex, sexuality, periods, menopause, mental health, nipple hair, shame, and many more taboos.
We both were like started off like we're not into these heteronormative things like getting married, but my mom kind of mentioned it a few times and I could see that she wanted it and we kind of realized that we wanted it as well.
It's time we heard the voices of real South Asian women, not just those we see in Bollywood or in mainstream Western media. It's time we had a real voice, a loud and proud and strong voice.
But then we've said, okay, let's get married. But now we're down this pathway of like expectations of what that means.
I've invited some incredible women to sit at my kitchen table, drink chai and put the world to rights. In this episode, I'm talking to three amazing women. My guests today are Fahmida Islam, Fam, a queer, non-binary Bengali and Muslim who works in fintech, Komal Amin, an actor from London, and Arup Sajid, who calls herself a queer storyteller who's into performance, poetry and writing. My three guests today identify as queer and South Asian, which, as we all know, is a difficult combination if you come from a culture that doesn't allow you to be sexual, let alone choose an alternative sexuality. Fam, talk to me about your sexual identity, how you see that.
It's developed over the few years. I definitely felt different when I was a kid. From the age of like 5, I noticed that I was different to all the kids. Obviously, didn't understand what sexuality was as a kid, right? So I grew up saying that I'm a lesbian. So when I came out first, I was like, yeah, I'm lesbian. I was in my food technology class in secondary school.
How old were you?
I think I was 15, something like that, 14, 15. I just had enough because I was being bullied in the class. And I just said, yeah, I'm a lesbian, I'm what? And some people were really supportive and some people were just like, whatever. And so now like my identity has evolved massively. I think my sexual identity has a lot of politics behind it now. So I actually identify as queer. That's my sexuality.
Can you remember the first time you felt attracted to a woman?
Yeah, I think my first crush was actually my best friend in secondary school. And I didn't tell her, but, you know, when I finally came out to everyone, I was just like, had enough of everyone taking the piss and like bullying me and stuff, calling me tomboy. It was an all-girls school that I went to. So she was still supportive. She was still a great, great friend. And then one night I just had enough. We used to call each other every night, like nearly every night at school, and just chat about nonsense and go to school and chat about nonsense still. I just told her one night over the phone, I was like, you know, I have something to tell you. And I started crying. And she's like, babes, what's going on? Are you okay? And then I just said it. I was like,
What did you say?
I really like you. Yeah, I really like you. Like, more than just a friend. Do you know what? Her reaction was just unreal. She was just incredible. And she's still, like, still in contact with me. We're still really good friends.
Was she supportive when you said that? 100%.
Yeah, 100%. She was supportive. She's like, nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. And that just made it so much easier to just be. And, like, I didn't stop being. And even though I had, like, a massive crush on her, I mean, I thought I was in love with her. But the way that she reacted just told me that, you know, she's a friend. That's a proper friend. It really didn't matter, like, my crush on her or me thinking that I'm in love with her, me being, like, obsessed or besotted with her. Like, it didn't matter. It didn't change. And that only made our friendship stronger. I'm in my 30s now and everything has changed and thought processes have changed and I am more politicized and I recognize my heritage more than I ever have. As a kid growing up, I actually thought I was English. Like, so the school teachers were asking me, what's your nationality and where are you from? And I was like, yeah, I'm English. And the teacher's like, no, you're not English. You're something else. Can you go and find out? And I had to go and ask my family, like, where am I? What am I? But it was only until like, what, 5 years ago or something that I started connecting with my Bengali heritage and actually appreciating where I'm from. And I've become more politicized in terms of like racism and sexuality. So identifying as queer is a whole load of all of that politics in my sexuality. So intersectional feminism and everything else that comes with it.
Yeah, actually, I got to agree with you. It's really interesting how intersectionality and sort of connecting with like the wider sort of identity beyond just like one sort of thing. Because I actually identified as bi first when I first like really started, because I thought, well, I've dated guys and now I'm dating girls. So what's that all about? And I was trying to figure it out. But then I realized that there's quite a lot of biphobia in sort of like when I was dating, especially when I started doing online dating. There's a lot of people like no bis, amongst other things. So then I'm like, oh, and then people don't take you seriously. I went on a lot of dates. I'm like, are you bi? Are you straight or gay? There's no such thing as bi. And then so then I was like, oh God, if I want to meet a woman, maybe I should just say I'm lesbian. So for the longest time I said I was a lesbian. But if I'm really truly, I would probably say that I'm pansexual, because actually I don't really like to, for me, it goes beyond that. I still say to this day to my mum, and even I say, you know, I could fall in love with anyone. It could be a man. Unlikely, but could be. But it's because I try to think it's not really about necessarily just physical traits. And yeah, and that also goes on and beyond, like, so my partner is Bengali from Bangladesh. And, you know, again, like growing up in an Indian household, you just get used to kind of like these digs made at not so much Bangladesh, but particularly Pakistan, right? And it takes this kind of awakening, a bit like with your sexuality, it takes this awakening to realize that actually I'm living in this kind of little bubble of Indian privilege that kind of erases parts of South Asia, like Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, you know, and that kind of like this kind of, we need to sort of be more inclusive in every way, whether it's sexuality, gender. Yeah. And then that's happened, I think, in the last 5 years for me as well.
So you're from an Indian family?
Indian family, yeah. So, yeah. So I'm Indian. My parents were actually born, my mom in Uganda and my dad in Kenya. So they grew up there. And then my mom was expelled, part of the expulsion of Ugandans. So was a refugee here. And my dad moved here because finished school and decided to study here. Funnily enough, my grandma, on a side note, used to send like the children back to India, but we had some health problems and my grandma had got in her head that India was a bad place for her children. So she sent her third child to England. So that's how it started, that we ended up being in England. Gujarati heritage. Yeah. That's my background. I mean, I I used to sort of see myself as not so much English, but I've always sort of seen myself as British, and also didn't really. I had this kind of inner sort of uncomfortable feeling about being Indian when I was young.
Internalized racism.
Yes, internalized racism. Yeah, that's it.
That's when I woke up. It was like 5 years ago. It was an ex of mine who actually was like, you do realize you have internalized racism. And that was because I kept saying, no, I don't like Asians. I only like dating white people.
Yes, it's so true. It's this internalized racism, and it starts at like such a young age, you don't even realize it. My parents used to laugh when I was like, honestly, 2 years old, they'd be like, oh, she's going to be with a white person when she grows up. Because I used to literally shun, you know, adults come to a baby like, oh, coo-coo-coo, how cute. I used to shun brown people and black people, and I would just go to the white people. And I was like, where does that come from? Because I don't think they've necessarily internalized their racism. I think I'm lucky for me that they're kind of, I don't know, outside of that. I don't see them as like in that way, but I don't think I got it from my parents, and I definitely feel I got it from school life or nursery life or whatever it was. And it takes this awakening, and you know, it's actually helped reading books. I've been reading a lot lately, and it really just kind of uncovers and all these layers of what identity is and how to decolonize my mind, really, and un do all the damage that's been done from internalized racism and colorism, which also comes from actually my own community a lot of times, because that I'm still working through, like this kind of disgust with darker skin. And it's more towards myself than towards like other people, I like to think anyway. Yeah.
Arup, do you want to tell me a little bit about your culture, your identity, who you identify as?
Very confusing. I mean, I grew up in Pakistan, so you would think that I would be so in touch with my culture and my roots and all of this, and, you know, be going to like functions every weekend and stuff. But just we grew up in a white suburb, and it just wasn't the thing. And my mom left when I was very young, and so I didn't have that. Your mom guides you a lot of the time. And I didn't have a lot of that. And so when she left, she was actually like the glue for the family and the glue for our wider community as well. And so when she went, it was just, we weren't in touch with anyone really, even our cousins and stuff. We only saw like maybe once a year or something like that. So that thing was gone, that culture aspect of it. And so my dad was just working to survive and take care of us. And so culture kind of got, you know, shooed to the back. And so I'm very confused even till now. I mean, I don't feel very Pakistani, or the image of Pakistani that I have in my head, or I don't feel that I am in touch with my culture enough at the moment. I mean, even when people meet me, they're like, you're Pakistani? What the hell, you know, like... I don't know what I can do. What should I do? Should I wear Shabal Kameez all the time? Like, what should I do to make myself be? Because I want to be. Because I am proud. It's not. I'm not ashamed because of it or anything like that. It's where I'm from. You know. There's so much beauty to the land and everything. And not to get too nationalistic, because I don't believe in that. But like, I am proud of where I'm from. So, yeah. So I just feel like at the moment I'm very much about. I'm in a learning stage. You've caught me at a learning stage. I haven't figured anything out, and I'm very much taking the first step towards it.
When I was talking to Komal Aruban Pham, I started to think about my own sexual identity, about my years growing up in India. I think the reason we teach shame to little girls is so that they would never dare associate sex with pleasure. So we don't do anything to give ourselves pleasure. Sex is something that's done to us. How does your culture affect your sexuality? Does it?
It's intrinsically tied into it. Yeah, I've realized actually now that, for example, like when I was younger, I used to go to like lesbian bars wherever I could find them. I lived in Birmingham. I lived in Leeds. I used to seek out the lesbian bars. I would not feel comfortable there. I would not. Because people would look at me. And I got this vibe that you're not welcome here. And I don't know if they, honestly, I've been to lesbian bars where they're like, oh, do you realize this is a lesbian bar? And I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm here. And they just look at you because like, you're like the only brown person in the room. Maybe not so much in London, but that actual incident happened in London. So, but the vibe was the same when, I mean, this was like 10 years ago, right? And I realized after like, I look at my friendship group now, and they're all a mixture of queer, all types of queer, but none are kind of purely white. They're all majority Asian, East Asian, sort of mix of people, Middle Eastern, but they're not white. And I think there is this kind of, and I didn't do it on purpose. I just think that there's something I feel like the connection is special where the two intersect of the intersection between queer and, because, yeah, and that's, I think actually I get on with South Asians or brown people or non-white people the most. And I think, I don't know if it's the world we live in where we've become so polarized that I feel safe. And the queerness is a part of that. It's just intrinsically linked. Yeah.
Pam? Grew up with the conditioning of women do this, men do that. So women cook, women eat last, and women have to look amazing all at the same time during Eid, you know. And I think that like the invites from like weird families that would appear out of nowhere, and then my mum would be like, wear your best dress, and I'd be like, why? And then you find out afterwards it was a possible marriage proposal and you're only like 15, 16 and then you're like, okay, I'm going to entertain this. And then I didn't follow through with it, but I just wanted to have a laugh with it because I knew that I was not interested in men in that way. I dated lots of men and I partly kind of blame my upbringing because of that. You know, I wanted to prove to everyone that I'm straight. No, this, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to have sex with a guy. And I didn't until I was like, what, 23 or something? And it was just not what I thought it was going to be. It wasn't like the movies. It didn't turn me, you know, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't anything groundbreaking. I was just like, is this it? You know, I had no emotions or anything. And I kind of, you know, I resent, it's messed up, but I resent my upbringing and my mum for that. The old man, obviously, yeah, because of everything that he did. And maybe if he was less controlling and more liberating for my mum, then she could have had a better life. And then maybe we would have been of a different mindset. But yeah, I'm slowly kind of considering myself as non-binary also. So that's a part of my queer identity that I'm thinking about because I've never really been 100% comfortable with my body. I know that's not sexuality, but gender roles at home, and I'd never really fitted in, and I was just a square trying to fit into a triangle hole.
Arub, do you find that your culture affects your sexuality in any way?
I think it just makes me a little, like, I want to hide it. Also, especially when I'm around like family and stuff, I just feel like I don't want to be the stereotype, so I stop myself from doing certain things around my family.
Like
I'll dress extra girly in front of them, just so they don't, you know, think either that stereotype. Things like that, little things like that. I just feel like the culture that I've grown up around, very conservative. Everything is like suppressed, I believe is the word, suppressed, just very, you're in this little tight space. And so I think saying, oh, I'm queer, you know, it just makes me feels like I'm rebelling against my culture. It really does, because for so long it's just been, nope, you've got to be in this little thing and you've got to do this and this and this, and this is what you do to be a successful Pakistani woman. And this just feels like completely the opposite. And sometimes I feel good about that because I'm like, yes, I'm a rebellious woman. Like, yes, you know, 21st century and that. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, why can't I just please my father? You know, mm-hmm. You know, it's a very difficult balance. Sometimes it does feel like I'm just raging against the machine.
It's interesting what you said, that just by the fact of being queer is not being Desi or being South Asian. Isn't that weird?
Mm.
But it's so true. And there's so many other sort of, even being heteronormative, if you don't do this, you're not Desi. If you do this, you're, you know, there's such a tight little box, I think is exactly what you described. And either you fit there or you don't. And which is such a shame.
Yeah, I totally agree. Even going beyond that. So I've been out to my family. Well, I not knowingly out to my family since 21 to my parents. But to the wider family, as gossip goes, it's trickled out to everyone eventually. And now sort of everyone knows. But there's still sort of like, even once everyone knows, there's so much stuff, like barriers that you have to get through and so much heteronormativity you have to wade through. Like, for example, you know, even though I've been with my partner for 3 years and we're engaged, but and then even that, like, I wonder, like, we both were like started off like we're not into these heteronormative things like getting married, but my mom kind of mentioned it a few times and I could see that she wanted it, and we kind of realized that we wanted it as well. But then we've said, okay, let's get married. But now we're all down this pathway of like expectations of what that means, and you have to, people expect certain things, and like all of a sudden I'm being taken down this pathway of heteronormative expectations, and it's not right for us, I don't think, you know. And it's like people just want to put you in these boxes and fit you in and make themselves be able to understand. So it's going to be like a little bit of an interesting couple of years trying to break down like expectations of what a married couple looks like, or what even our marriage will be if we get married, or if we want a civil partnership, if we want it to be religious. I mean, yeah.
Can you talk to me about your kind of navigation of experience from a culture point of view, from where you were to where you are now? I can tell you about myself. So I think when I was growing up, because everything South Asian was so rigid, I kind of rejected everything. And now as I'm older, I'm going back to it to say, I can take these bits from it. And I'm still South Asian. I don't have to not be that, but I can still be this and this and that. How's your kind of relationship with the culture? Has that changed?
Yeah. So like over the last like 5 or 6 years, maybe, I've developed friendships, like really deep, meaningful friendships with Bengali people. I got involved with a queer Bengali collective they're called Oitijo. That was my first time of like being exposed to really cool Bengalis. I was like, oh, okay, they're really cool. And then I was like, yeah, I want to get involved. And then a theater group called Komala Collective, they invite me out to Bangladesh, and I went out and did some filming with them and interviewed rape victims from
in Bangladesh.
Yeah, from the, you know, the wartime between Pakistan and, yes, Bangladesh. And that was incredible. That was such an incredible experience for me. And it's like, it was a way for me to connect with my culture and heritage in a way that my mum was unable to introduce me to it. You know, lots of history and lots of color, and you know, there was sad stuff, but there's also beauty, and we're like losing that heritage. And kids these days, like the next generation, hardly any of them are speaking Bengali. And it's just really sad for me. Like, and maybe 10 years ago, I'd have been like, yeah, that's cool, you don't really need to speak Bengali. But now I'm just like, they need to speak Bengali. Do not lose that heritage, you know?
That's interesting, isn't it? As you grow older, you kind of seem to gravitate to the things, the culture that you come from more and more. And the kind of instinctive thing when you're younger is you just say, I don't want any of this because, you know, it doesn't sit with my view of the world.
I think it's because my mom, my parents would, well, I think it's just my mom, really. Mainly my mom, because of everything that she went through as a kid, how controlled she was by patriarchy and, you know, the old man and everything else. And it was projected onto all of us growing up. So we were like really rigid and controlled. And no, you're not allowed to date boys. I dated women afterwards, and so it's like either or, like you just can't win. You just, I'm accepting that. So that's my navigation, making peace with the fact that my mum is never really going to fully accept who I am, and that's okay. She still loves me, I know that, because she invites me over for like pillow rice and, you know, Eid and stuff, and she gave me £20 for Eid. She's like, here you go, here's your Eid present. And that's just my mum's way of telling me that she still loves me, and despite what the society is going to say about disowning me and possibly beheading me, and that was by my auntie,
she actually say that?
Yeah, my auntie did say that. That was a suggestion as well, the resolution, the solution to me being gay and, yeah, disrespecting the whole family and lineage and whatever else, but yeah.
Komal, what do you think? What's your kind of journey been? Has your relationship with your culture, has that changed as you've grown older?
Yeah, like I said before, like I had the whole internalized racism, and I was like, I'm British. And but then there's like the whole journey of actually when you kind of live in this world, and more actually I find it that there's a certain, there's institutionalized racism, there's a rejection of who you are from so many sort of institutions and facets of this country, that you have to re-examine your identity. I think it's, I don't know, for me at least, I couldn't live in this world and be like, I'm only British, because so many parts of, like, you know, people, like, you know, even when I was at university, like I was getting things like, oh, Komal, you're dirty because you're brown, or, you know, like, do you, oh, what's that curry smell? Oh, it's Komal. It's like with my friends. These are my friends. And I don't hold grudges against them, because I think that was their ignorance. They were 18. They come from wherever in the UK and never met a brown person before. Not an excuse, just, you know, I'm letting go of that. But you realize you're different, and you're made to realize you're different on many different occasions. And so you have to really re-examine all of that. And And like Fam said, it's like you start meeting. I grew up in Switzerland for a majority of my childhood as well. So I was surrounded by all white people. And the only other Indians that were there were Indians from India. And they rejected me as an Indian because I was British. So I did not have a connection to India. But then when I went to uni and met other Indians who weren't like Indian and weren't what we called rude girls and rude boys, who kind of were very, very focused on dating and makeup and bitching. And I was into sports, right? And not your typical girly girl. And so then I found other Asians that I was like, oh, so, you know, there's a spectrum of people. There's so many of us and we're so different. We don't all just fit into these two or three categories. And when you discover that, you, like you said, you can, you discover your culture on your own terms, like bits that you like, bits that you don't like, bits that you really connect with, and you're open to it. Because when you're a kid and you're forced to wear these janya drawers, as we call them, or and you're forced to like wear makeup and all this stuff, you don't want, you reject it because you're forced to do it. But now you're like, it's kind of cool because your friends are doing it. And then you rediscover it on your own terms, really.
So what's the most fun or amazing thing about being South Asian? Like for me, it's food. So clearly it's like, the minute someone says Indian or South Asian, it's like samosas and jalebis and saris and like marigolds and, you know, festivals and waking up for Diwali. Like we'd wake up, I grew up in India. And we'd wake up really excited, like, and fill all this, like, balloons of water and chuck it at people who were wearing, like, white clothes and going to work, you know. So this is, you know, for me, that's my culture and that's kind of what it means to be South Asian. Those are the fun bits, the music, you know, the, whether it's Bollywood or, you know, Sufi music or, you know, walking along Mumbai, you know, the promenade, I don't know if you've ever been, eating chanas from the little paper roll, you know, that's what being Indian is for me. Could you tell me what it is for you guys?
So it started off as being dragged to Green Street and being dragged to Whitechapel and Bethnal Green and Brick Lane before you go to your cousin's house to go buy mishti, mithai, right? And you know, and sweets and chocolates and crisps and everything that's really unhealthy, and then go there and just eat amazing food. And I really enjoyed it as a kid. I did love it, but I also wanted to be out on the streets, and I wanted to experience being actually Bengali, like actually South Asian. And actually I didn't even know till like 10 9 like maybe 8 years ago or something that we can refer to each other as South Asian, because I was just like Bengali and you're Indian, you're Pakistani and you're Gujarati, and you know, and that was it. It was like so divisive. And so I'm enjoying it now. I'm loving everything now. Now I can identify as South Asian and Bengali and enjoy all the colors and the music and the food, and really appreciate like good home cooked food. Like these restaurants that are out nowadays, I'm just like, like a white friend would be like, oh, so where in Brick Lane should I go to eat Bengali food? I'm like,
no,
my house maybe. My mom's maybe. Oh, there are some, like there are some Bengali restaurants, yeah, that are quite all right. But yeah, and also Desi is really difficult for me to identify with, because Desi a lot of the times kind of is exclusive to people that can speak Hindi. That's what I've found in like in lots of like, regardless of heterosexual or queer spaces, like a lot of Desi events, for some reason, I just find it so difficult as a Bengali person to connect, because it's very Bollywood, it's very Hindi, it's very patriotic in a weird way, and it's kind of like, well, I'm Bengali, I'm South Asian, I can relate to having that heritage.
Yeah.
But,
no,
yeah.
I get that. I think a lot of British Asian experience that I've seen here is very Hindi Punjabi. It's very northern. And for someone like me who comes from Kerala, a lot of it, I do connect with some of it, but not all of it. So I do understand what
it's
you
the same
mean.
With my Sri Lankan friends as well, you know, and it's just, and music wise,
yes,
we have different music.
Exactly.
Bollywood's
like this monster that's gobbled up everything else.
Yeah, and movies as well. Yeah. It's like, you know, actually Bangladesh is producing some really cool films, and it's not popularized. And this is it. It's like, you know, the Western, when the West get their hand on it, the media is on it.
you know?
Yeah.
Kumal. It's a hard one, actually, because, I think definitely the food. I mean, yeah, you just can't. Food, I mean, yeah. I sometimes feel whenever you feel bad, just food brings me up and Indian food. And I think also my family. I think specifically my family, because although, you know, I've gone on a journey with them, and now I'm at this place where I'm like, oh, I can finally be my full authentic self with them, and I can be Indian, and I can love my food, and I can speak my language. So it's like this protective thing that I love my family and my extended family. That's what makes me Indian, because like you said, like there's so much patriotism in the wider Indian world that I don't feel comfortable with. Even when the cricket was on, Cricket World Cup, I was happy supporting Bangladesh because I was with my girlfriend the whole time, right? And I was, and her family are very much into the cricket. And then I went to my and they explained to me why they don't like India, why they don't like Pakistan. And I understand that they've got that animosity and it's all like fun and games. Yeah. And then but I kind of buy into that a little bit, I suppose. It's really bad.
It's actually like kind of quite deep and true.
There's kind of like this kind of animosity, especially in sports. Yeah.
Yes.
And so I have learned, I know there's this kind of, especially what's going on in India now, like I have this deep discomfort with Gujarati people who are really like behind Modi, or even people who love Modi in general. Do you know what I mean? And I've been like let down by my lovely celebrities who I used to love, and then be like, oh, you like Modi? Nah, unfollow. That's the best that I can do for you. Unfollow. And all this kind of patriotism, and it happens on both sides, because like I kind of suddenly get this like feeling, oh, I've got to protect in my head, like stand by Pakistan and Bangladesh. And but also they also have like deep problems of them their own politically. And so I'm like, I just don't know how to connect on that kind of grander nationalistic scale. So I just go really zero in, like, I love my family and my food and that's it.
And those are the ways we connect with our culture
and
as well, aren't they?
Yeah, and also just this kind of connection you can find in London. I've not found it anywhere else where, you know, Bangladeshis, Pakistanis, Indians can be friends and we can be like... star-crossed lovers and all that stuff, you know. It's like a safe space in a way.
Arup,
For me, it's very much about those old Bollywood films, like classic Urdu.
Oh gosh,
you know,
yeah.
My God, Vijayanthiwala is
the most
amazing actress to ever live. And yeah, that if I look at that just, I just feel like I'm in touch with my ancestors, I guess, in that way. That's probably what they were watching, you know?
I was watching that, actually.
Yeah. I just love it. And it's just such beautiful Urdu and just everything, the camera, everything. It was honestly the golden age for cinema. So that makes me feel super connected to South Asia in general. And then also, I just think about my time back in Rawalpindi, like the sense of community that we had there. That is something that I love about our culture so much. And obviously it comes with its bad sides of people being in your business too much and people being judgmental and all of this stuff. But the good parts of that is something that we need to foster, especially in London, where it was just this thing of you don't even speak to your neighbor. Like, how does that happen? You know, why does that happen? So, that sense of community, I just feel like we just need to foster it here. That's one of my favorite things about South Asian culture.
It's amazing, isn't it? So across this table, we come from very different places. We've grown up in very different places. Our experiences are completely different. But all the things we've talked about today, whether it's kind of the journey from rejecting culture to trying to find something, to trying to be who we are within the culture, to try and grow, to overcome trauma, we've all had that. So I think, you know, it personally, when I see the kind of stories coming out of India, or the little I'm this and you're that and I don't understand your way, and actually at the end of the day, what do we want? We want love, we want connection, we want belonging, and that's the same for all of us. And it's just really sad, I think, the way the world is going. But here it's not. We've sat down for an hour and how many things have we found in common? Like everything,
Jalebi.
Right? Jalebi.
Jalebi.
Talking to Fam, Komal and Arub got me thinking about my own sexuality. I learnt about sex through women's magazines back in India in the 80s. We didn't really have sex education at school, and there was no internet. Yes, I'm that old, so no Pornhub or educational videos. I started reading those agony aunt columns, where for some reason, most of the questions were to do with sex. Like a little detective, I put the pieces together until I had a full understanding of what went on in people's bedrooms. Gosh, was I shocked when I figured it out. People did that? All these nice uncles and aunties I met, they did that? Anyway, the horror soon turned into curiosity. I read any book I could get my hands on, and a lot of them had very steamy sex. I remember feeling turned on for the first time after finishing a particularly saucy story. But anything sexual felt wrong, and I remember feeling guilty about it. Because I had grown up being told that sex was not for respectable women. Our bodies existed just so they could pleasure men. Female desire was so far removed from the culture that I grew up in. It felt inconceivable that I, as a woman, could ever experience sexual desire, and that I would have the autonomy to demand sexual pleasure. It's been a long journey. Now that I'm in my 40s, I feel proud about my body's capacity to feel pleasure. I'm Sangeeta Pillai. Thank you for listening to the Masala Podcast. Masala Podcast is part of my platform Soul Sutras. What's that all about? Soul Sutras is a network for South Asian women. A safe space to tell our stories. A place to reclaim our bodies. To tackle taboos within our culture. To be exactly who we want to be. Get in touch and tell me your stories about your taboos. Check out my website, soulsutras.co.uk, or get in touch via email at soulsutras.co.uk. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Just look for Soul Sutras. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe and leave me a nice review. It really helps.